Good evening, this is John Johnson on Radio EduTalk. And tonight my guest is Andrew Jewell, who's going to be talking about 10 years of iPads in education. Good evening, Andrew.
Good evening, thanks for having me.
Delighted and excited about this one. If you're listening live and you want to join in the conversation, if you drop a tweet towards with a hashtag EduTalk or attempt at John Johnson or probably at Andrew Jewell, we'll try and pick them up, but no promises, because sometimes when you're talking you miss the odd tweet.
You get carried away.
but we'll try and pick up any questions anybody's had, or hello, or whatever you send in. That'd be nice. Andrew, I think I'm right in saying that, and we're talking about 10 years in iPad, and you've been using iPads pretty much since the start.
Yeah, so yeah. I mean, obviously, my background actually isn't anything to do with tech, really. I became a primary teacher way back in like 96, 97. And it wasn't until, 2010, when the iPad first came out, that I really kind of became interested in what technology really brought to the classroom. Up until that point, obviously, there's the same history that probably most people recognise with the advent of smart boards and various iterations of voting systems and voice recording units and green screen cameras and flip video cameras and all the sort of technology that we kind of all remember and probably still have in cupboards from various parts and places. But yeah, 2010, the school that I was working in at the time, a little school called Cedars School down in Greenock, we had a staff conversation where we were looking at how could we make the experience of technology in the school more reflective of what the world was looking like outside the school. And at that point you were starting to see kids coming to school with smartphones and just starting really in the playground and iPods. And we knew of school, so my good friend Fraser Spears, he was in touch with Abdul Chohan at the time, who had done an iPod Touch deployment in his school down at Isa Academy in Bolton. So we discussed that and we pretty much, I think, had agreed to go down that route. And then Apple announced the iPad just a couple of weeks after that decision. So we revised our thinking a little bit and at that point we deployed the iPad. So that would be August of 2010. So that was iPad 1, which, if you remember, no camera. And probably not designed for anything that we think about now in education, more designed as a content consumption device rather than anything to do with content creation, I think, at the time.
Yeah, I mean, I remember doing one or two wee iPad Touch pilots, and I loved those wee things, actually. And I think I sort of bet my... when iPads came out, I still thought that iPod Touches had some legs, but turned out I was wrong. they seem to have faded into the background. But the first iPad was quite different than the ones we had now.
Yeah, it was, and I think the main difference was obviously that we didn't have the camera, and to be fair, when we started using it, we were really finding our way. So you would ask questions maybe, in terms of deployment models and, do you need to create an Apple ID for every iPad? Do you need to buy an app for every single device? And even Apple at the time were kind of, well, we'll come back to you on some of these, some of these answers. Because I think it really took everybody by surprise. And what turned out, was that was actually the world's first one-to-one iPad, program in education. We didn't, I think, altogether realise that at the time. And as I say, a lot of the credit for the whole thing went to Fraser, who very much led to the deployment there, and still has a huge voice in the whole world of iPads in education. So, but yeah, we started to begin to discover creative solutions to problems in the classroom that were really interesting and very innovative at the time for us anyway. And then that kind of that grabbed attention in various parts of the world. And in some ways the rest is history, but the ball certainly started rolling back in 2010.
And I'm just, as I said, I guess I don't know, an Apple were thinking of it as an education device particularly at that point.
Nope.
I can't remember.
No, I don't think so.
And you hooked on to this early. And do you think the vision you had for their use is the same as you would think today?
I think that's a really interesting question, actually, in terms of vision. And I think possibly thinking has evolved to some degree, in that I think now we think about the device totally differently. We think about it much more as a kind of place for creativity and the idea of personalizing the learning experience for kids and being able to kind of, you know, offer much more kind of open outcome tasks and, you know, give the students the opportunity to kind of slightly direct what the outcome looks like, all of that stuff, and, you know, have something to say about what marking looks like, what a digital workflow within the classroom looks like. You know, all of that, I think, was not something that was even close to being in our heads at the time when it deployed. We were just simply thinking, well, out there in the world, you know, technology is becoming more mobile, it's becoming more personal, and how do we reflect that in school, really? That was the thinking at the time.
Yeah, I think it sounds like your thinking was reasonably open-ended, that this was an interest in technology. Technology was always important, and you would follow it and see where it led, perhaps, rather than have a master plan. I mean, I don't know.
Well, I think that's probably true to some degree, and I must confess that I was probably at that time, you know, I was involved in the planning to the extent that any of the other staff in the school were involved in it, and very much behind the vision. But it was only really when I began to see the impact of it in the classroom that the sparks really began to light for me in terms of this really can have a significant impact on, you know, well, I suppose the learning experience for the students, but also just the experience of being a teacher for me, which was at the time I found more than any other technology. I just found it was something that was inspiring. It was engaging. It was intuitive. It was something that I could have an idea. And, you know, for example, you know, what if we could put these iPads together somehow and create an iPad band that we could play along with the Christmas play for my primary seven boys who were not particularly keen on, you know, being dressed up as shepherds with tea towels on their heads. You know, what if we could do that? And the technology, for the first time, certainly in my experience, allowed me to kind of have ideas like that and explore ideas like that in a way which was doable. You know, and it was doable for me as a sort of non-techie person. It didn't require huge barriers of understanding to be overcome. Some of these ideas could be done, you know, with relatively little fuss in the classroom, and also relatively little kind of additional kit, if you like, which was important at the time as well. So that was really for me what brought it to life was more, what does this do for the experience of being a teacher?
Oh, okay, that's quite an interesting take on it, and I think your example of engaging these boys through music is a nice idea. And this was on, as I say, the original iPads before we thought of them as creative devices. And do you think that the fact that they are very creative devices, that became apparent to you quickly, or were you expecting more to be using them from sort of standard business type tasks and word processing and the likes?
It became apparent fairly quickly, although I would probably say as well that a lot of that kind of discovery phase was was actually kind of, a lot of it kind of was by accident almost, mm. rather than by design. You know, so that it would be the sort of thing where you would have an idea and it was kind of triggered by something that would happen in the classroom about something. So another good example I often give was a visit to Denmark, where I visited a school where they had a garden shed in the middle of the classroom in this particular school. And I mean, it was fascinating, right, to me, because I was like, what on earth is a garden shed doing built in the middle of the classroom? And this teacher was using it as a kind of space that every new class that came in at the beginning of the year, they redecorated it. They, you know, they hung it with fairy lights. It was somewhere where the kids could go and they could do small group tasks or individual tasks, or small collaborative tasks. And it was really, really interesting. And I remember thinking, you know, coming back from that trip, thinking, I want to do that in my classroom. And I can see why, because we've obviously got the iPad. I think by that point we had iPad 2. And thinking, you know, I could get my kids to go into a space like that and actually record themselves, mm-hmm. give me feedback on how they thought they were progressing in their learning. And that would allow me to kind of, you know, build formative assessment really into my teaching in a way which was fundamentally useful to me. So I could check their understanding, how they thought they were understanding, you know, begin to explore pupil voice, student voice in the context of their own learning. So we built it wasn't a garden shed, because I wasn't allowed to do that, unfortunately. But we built one of the cupboards in my classroom. We changed it into something we called the reflection booth.
Right, okay.
Yeah, it was great. So we got a kind of on-air light outside the cupboard, so the kids could go in to the cupboard and switch their iPad on, turn the light on outside the classroom, and people would know that somebody was recording something in there. And then they could sit down, and my idea was that they would say, you know, so I've just finished percentages in maths, I'm really pleased with my progress, I'm proud of how I'm doing, and I'm ready to move on to the next stage. And I would have this really kind of nice, informative, you know, self-assessment piece from the students. In actual fact, it was really fascinating, because they would say things like, right, so Mr. Joe's just finished doing percentages in maths. He goes too quickly. He always goes too quickly. Mm. You know, I feel I'm ready to move on to the next stage, and, you know, I'm a bit concerned. So I started to get feedback, not just about how they thought they were learning, but also, you know, how they thought I was teaching.
Yeah, that's brilliant. That's brilliant. Love this idea. I love the idea that the room in the classroom. I certainly send children out of my classroom to find a quiet spot to record things, but it'd be much better to have a shed or a cupboard in your classroom. That sounds super.
And I think the point of that really is that, you know, there's some mental, you know, educational pedagogy underpinning that idea, but it almost was something that I just sort of thought by accident and came to life, you know. And so you can understand why that was, you know, that was a moment of kind of like, wow, this technology is really interesting. Mm-hmm. We kind of created a digital report card, which we piloted in my class. And again, that was something bringing together all the content that the kids were creating, examples of that. And, you know, that was back in the day. Like, now there's so many tools that you can use to do that. So sort of thing you can do with Seesaw or, you know, Shobi or, you know, many of these different tools.
I'm going to throw WordPress in there because I've got to. That's my stick. I think that's becoming not necessarily a report card, but this idea of portfolioing and things is becoming increasingly common. I'm kind of hesitant to say, but I think iPads have got a reasonably unique use in for that because of their portability, perhaps, and because of the camera, and perhaps because of the camera and the way it faces.
Yeah. I mean, another good example of that, one of our teachers, we, you know, took a bunch of kids to Kelvin Grove Art Gallery in Glasgow, and, shared the slide of the of the five paintings that, that she was looking for the kids to discover in the gallery, and it became a kind of digital treasure hunt. And again, that really transformed what the, you know, the concept of what the school trip to the art gallery kind of looked and felt like. And it was really the same sort of idea of kind of technology becoming embedded in the learning process, and not just being kind of an add-on either at the end of it or the beginning of it, or, you know, you know, and so elements of the learning process that sometimes were invisible began to become more visible because we were able to sort of, you know, use the technology in ways that brought them to life.
Yeah, I think, yeah, obviously a lot of the this sort of thing we read about and is going on. And maybe you could talk, I don't know about straight away, but about the process that's happening in Glasgow, where they're doing quite a large-scale experiment, I would say, with, I'm maybe using the word experiment wrong. Experiment sounds a bit risky, but you know what I mean? You're certainly involved in that. I've seen bits and pieces on Twitter, certainly about what's going on in Glasgow, and you maybe could talk a wee bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's really exciting, and I'd say probably have a quibble with the word experiment from the point of view that I don't think, when done correctly, that this we know that this technology can, and not just with iPad, but with other types of devices as well. You know, it can make a very positive impact. Now, you know, I'm not in any way naive enough to think that it just putting the technology in makes a difference. I mean, I have a big issue with people that say, you know, we put iPads into our schools and the grades went up, or we put any other kind of devices into our schools and suddenly the grades went up. That, in my mind, is very little to do with the iPad or the Chromebook or the whatever technology, and a lot to do with the planning and the strategy and the classroom management and the teacher training and all the kind of elements that go around a successful deployment of technology. I'm sure you could just throw technology in and it would make very little difference, and maybe it would make even a negative difference. So, but there's been enough, I think, projects around the world, studies of this kind of technology that show that where it's done right, it can actually make a genuinely positive impact. So I think hopefully what Glasgow are doing is not an experiment in that sense. I think it is innovative. I think it's a recognition that the conversation around one-to-one technology has moved on significantly from when we started in 2010. You know, it's almost a kind of understood, I think, now, that where we took a school bag with textbooks and maybe other things in it, that probably students of today will be, and in many places of the world, are already taking a device, whatever that looks and feels like. And so, I mean, in Glasgow, it's obviously it's a strategic program from the local authority to look at providing that device to every student from primary 6 to S6, and in a kind of ratio from primary 1 to 5. And I think what excites me about that is actually all the challenge that comes with how do you, you know, help teachers to navigate that in such a way that they can find something that makes their teaching life better, that they can find something which is inspiring them in terms of their daily role as a teacher, which can bring something to life, which can help the learning experience of the students. It's got a commitment to equity at the very heart of it. So we're looking at making an impact on the educational experience of some students in the most, some of the most deprived areas in our country. We want to see what impact that can have. We'll be looking at sort of tracking and measuring some of that. So, you know, it's a huge project. It covers 300 establishments. That's from early years right through to secondary schools. And that's across 26 learning communities across the whole city. And it will ultimately touch the lives of, you know, tens and tens of thousands of students over the period of the next 5-7 years. So huge challenge. And I don't know what else maybe interests you around it. I mean, certainly happy to talk to whatever elements of it you're interested in.
Well, there is obviously many, and I think our listeners will be fascinated to hear a wee bit more about it. First thing, I mean, I know that in Cedars and in some other early iPad projects that children took the iPads home.
Yeah.
And are they trying that in Glasgow? Or is it a school device?
Yeah, no. Well, in the sort of one-to-one setting, I think there's a desire that would be possible for students to have the chance to do that. And there's obviously very, very many good reasons why that would be a positive thing. And that actual question kind of strikes at what I think is the heart of one of the kind of key platforms for success for a project of that scale, and that is, number one, communication, and number two, the actual kind of deployment environment. So, you know, the deployment environment for these devices has moved on so much that the power of the MDM by which they're managed, the power of being able to kind of sort of control some of that environment and apply profiles and that sort of thing gives a level of security around what we're doing that we're very much going to depend on. And I think also communication is vital, and communication with parents and from the schools with the parents, because although the project is being sort of crafted, if you like, at the local authority level, it's very much going to be owned and driven by the individual schools and the individual establishments. And I think that's, again, vital, because they know their parents, they know the demographics, they know their students, they know their family circumstances, and that will be very much key to the success. And but there is a real argument for the power of this, and I've seen this in firsthand, obviously, you know, where kids take the devices home, that feedback and marking and homework can become a lot more sort of impactful, timely. Parents can see into the school experience of their kids in a way that they maybe couldn't before. So, but yeah, it's going to be a really very interesting kind of study as we go forward.
Yeah, I think you touched on the idea of schools making decisions around this and everything else, and I wonder, does that answer the critics of one-to-one schemes that haven't gone right? And earlier on you said, you know, you have to be prepared for it. And I'm guessing that by giving the schools choices about what they do and things, is that they'll do them when they're ready, rather than everybody does this now. And that's maybe a powerful way to get success.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, right up front, acknowledging that this is no way kind of like just an off the cuff, poorly thought out idea of how to kind of make a quick win in education that we've taken. So I'll give you an example, actually, that Apple in the US are part of, along with other technology companies, actually, they're part of a project called Connect Ed, which is originally started by President Obama, I think, back in about 2011. The challenge put out was for some of the big technology firms to provide technology to some of the most deprived students across America. And Apple to date, I think, are involved in about 111 schools across I don't know how many states, and again in some very deprived parts of the US, both rural and city schools. And that involves something in the region of 55,000 iPads, 4,500 teachers, and that's very similar to the sort of numbers that we're talking about in Glasgow, but obviously spread out on a much, much wider scale across America. But some of the findings from their independent research that they had commissioned by a SRI, which is a kind of independent research body, have just recently been published. They make quite interesting reading, and I think it issue that if you do this at a level where you strategically think through, you're going to do it. So, you know, for example, a small example of that would be, you know, we give every school in Glasgow a vision and plan session before we do anything else, and that is to really work with the head teachers, the senior leadership team, the digital leaders of learning in the school, and to work on making sure that they own the vision and it ties in with their school improvement plan and it's tied to genuine targets so that they want to achieve as a school. How does the technology help them achieve those targets? And then that happens sometimes quite far in advance of the staff being delivered their devices. And with their devices comes a bunch of training for their teachers and support, and that's in a variety of forms. But that there is also, after that, there's a period of time before the students receive their devices, and that can be, you know, 4-6 months later. And all of these things are key and they're important because they're about communicating with the school, they're about building confidence, they're about staff becoming, capable and confident of their own abilities with the device and losing some of the fear factor, hopefully. So it isn't just about throwing technology in, it's very much about the strategy behind it and how and why, and, you know, key strategic goals in education that you're trying to achieve with this technology. And I think that's very much, you know, you'll be aware as anybody that you know, the government, and certainly in Scotland, are making this a very kind of clear commitment to digital right throughout the curriculum. You know, a lot of the Higios 4 documentation and, you know, digital is kind of very much threaded right through the heart of all of that. And it is now the responsibility of every teacher in Scotland to at least be trying to kind of, you know, showcase or at least embed effective teaching with digital tools in the heart of the learning process. And, you know, that is what we're trying to help teachers to do fundamentally.
So the teachers get the devices first before the pupils. And again, that seems to be from other one-to-ones, obviously not as big as this one I've talked about or been involved in. That really seems to be quite a key thing. And I'm guessing, you know, teacher confidence and things, it's not very nice if you think, and many teachers will think, that children know more about technology than they do. And I think that's one way to go to solve that. And the other way you hinted a wee while ago, which was to give learners choice.
Yep.
And I wonder, you know, could you speak to that a wee bit?
Of course, and this is one of the things, again, as a teacher, because I still feel very much, you know, I feel a teacher, not a techie person. Mm-hmm. and I always want to be able to kind of try and hopefully maintain that. And this is one of the areas that excites me most. And I think it speaks a little bit to the teacher confidence as well, because, you know, teachers sometimes feel, I need to know what every little button does or every tap does in every app on the device. And I need to be able to show kids exactly what to do with the apps. And I'll need to teach the kids how to use the apps. And I know that because I've been there, right? And I remember, for example, in the early days thinking, right, I'm going to spend this afternoon teaching Keynote to my kids on the iPad. This was to be a primary six class. And I prepared it the night before, and I was teaching them through how to use Keynote on the app. And I was saying, now this button does tap here, and I said, I remember saying, now unfortunately you can't put a video into a Keynote presentation yet on your iPad. And this wee boy was like, yes you can. And I was like, no you can't. And he said, yes you can. And I said, look, you know, basically I came to the point where I was like, look, I'm the teacher, you're just a wee boy, you know, I know, I went over this last night, you know, you can't do it yet, but you will be able to some point. And he just said, well, I've just done it. And I was like, oh, no, show me what you think you've done. And sure enough, you know, there he was with his Keynote file with the video right in it. And I don't know if Apple had updated Keynote over the course of the night between, or if I'd missed it when I was preparing, but certainly in the time I'd been kind of running through what every button did, he'd been way ahead of me. And he'd understood and got it, and he'd been working it all out for himself. And I think sometimes that's what teachers can be slightly afraid of. And some of that, I think, is reassuring teachers. You still know, you know what good looks like in terms of learning, right? That's the job, right? Our job is to know, what does good look like? Good learning, what does it look like? What does it feel like? What is my sense of that in the classroom? And oftentimes, you know, you can encourage teachers to begin to create rubrics around specific tasks, which kind of make it clear to the students what they think, what good looks like in a specific task. But it's not always necessary to say, right, oh, okay, class, today we are going to make a document, or today we are filling in a worksheet, or today we are making a movie, or today it's all about making a podcast. Sometimes it's okay to say, well, these are the key questions that we want to answer, and this is what I think good looks like in terms of this context. So I want to be able to understand these questions. I want to be able to share whatever you create with anybody else that's interested. I want to be able to, showcase that. And I want to know that you understand the key concepts that we've been trying to to cover. But maybe sometimes it's all right for the kids to think about their iPad as a toolbox that they can decide, okay, what are the best tools for me to answer this question? You know, maybe I want to make a movie to respond to that. Maybe I want to go and interview people and put that together. Maybe I'll put it together as a newspaper article, or, you know, I'll make a diagram out of it. Or, you know, the technology opens so many of those doors. And I'm obviously not naive enough to think that you can teach like that all the time, but it is a really powerful thing to have in your back pocket as a teacher, to be able to kind of know, well, I set the task and I can share the assessment rubric, and I can talk to the kids about what good looks like, but then they can somehow have a voice in their own learning in terms of deciding, well, what tools do I want to use? How do I use them? How do I respond? How do I submit my work back? And I think that's fascinating. And it also sometimes bridges the gap between the kind of analog world of teaching, where you could, you know, go and get the pens and paper out and just draw a diagram for me, which is great. And the digital, because, you know, some kids will gravitate immediately to the digital world. Some will be like, well, I want to paint something. Mm-hmm. Great. Well, that's fine. You can paint something. But even then, you know, you could take a photograph that with your iPad and submit it digitally for feedback. So, you know, again, for me, it's some of these things that actually really bring the teacher in me to life. Do you know what I mean? It's like, and seeing the way that kids respond to that and students respond to that, and how that increases engagement levels and within classes and lessons, and some of that is really exciting.
Yeah, I mean, I find it fascinating because I've been sort of returned to teaching after doing ICT stuff for a while for the last couple of years, and we've got a wee class with one-to-one iPads, and I think the first year I used them, the children were all very, we'll use the iPad for everything we can.
Yeah.
And I'm noticing now that there's some children who sometimes will choose to do something in another way. They'll say, can I draw instead? Or can I make a poster with pens rather than use pages? And they don't necessarily, it's not, they seem to get fixed into one particular thing, but sometimes they just seem to think, oh, this task for me, I want something that's a bit more tactile, or I don't know. I haven't figured out why they make those decisions, because sometimes I think it's because their pals doing that, or the usual sort of thing with kids.
Absolutely,
it's very nice.
I see that. Yeah, I see exactly that, and I think that speaks to, if you come back to the Glasgow project for a while, that actually speaks to some of the reasons why iPad was a perfect choice, because obviously the form factor allows, you know, if we're out in the art gallery, or if we're down doing pond dipping, or if we're in the PE hall, or we're like some of the school I was in today, some of their primary sevens were at the Davis Cup tennis. You know, the technology has an impact in all of these places, because you and so that's fascinating too, because you start thinking, well, what is it? What does a classroom actually look like? What is the learning experience? Where does it happen? And the truth is that what happens, obviously it happens in our classrooms, and you know, but it also happens in our homes, and it happens, you know, in the football field, and it happens in so many of these other places too. And it's not that you always have to be there kind of writing an essay on your iPad, but to be able to capture some of that in ways that actually kind of bring that experience to life, or mean that you can take it back to school with you and then reflect on it. You know, some of that is powerful stuff. And the form factor, obviously, of the iPad helps with that. You know, it's the tablet form factor certainly helps.
Yeah, if you're carrying around, and I mean, I think the only danger is that sometimes children will just say, oh, it's fine to put it down in that wet spot of grass. I'm just thinking, I had that experience today, you know. It's really not. But they're very comfortable with these devices.
Goals for the football, right? Yeah. Is your iPad in that bag? Well, probably don't use it as a goalpost.
Yeah, I want to pick up this piece of cardboard to do something else. I'll just put my iPad down here. And but they seem to become a very natural part of the learning, which I think is nice. I know I'm probably running over time and you've probably got plans, but the other question I was really interested in, and it was from a tweet that I'm not sure if it was you or somebody else put out yesterday about doing training on iPads without the network.
Yeah, so this was actually quite interesting, because I had a response from a good friend, Fraser, who responded to me. I basically said, you know, we've been doing this event in Glasgow. We called it iPad Without Wi-Fi. And you know, it was a great event, and teachers really, really enjoyed it. There was a great response. I think we had an average rating of about 4.5 out of 5 in terms of the overall effectiveness of the session. And Fraser's reply was about, you know, his concern that, you know, if there was a narrative of you don't need Wi-Fi, or it's okay to do digital learning without Wi-Fi. And I actually very much agree with that sentiment, because, you know, it would be naive and it'd be just stupid to say, well, you can do digital learning perfectly well without the internet. No, you can't, right? You need the internet. It's so much of what we do is fundamentally based around what we can now do online. Okay. But you know, for many of the schools that we're working with in Glasgow at the moment, the reality is that they don't have Wi-Fi yet, and that's coming. It's there's a program, and it's kind of working its way through the city, and that's something that I'm not so much involved in, that infrastructure piece. But you know, one of the reasons we chose iPad was, well, we want to have something that being connected to the internet is not the whole story, right? So whilst it's vital and it's fundamental and it's absolutely a key part of what technology can now do in learning, it's not the whole story. So some of the examples we've talked about there, you know, what does it mean in the PE hall? What does it mean if you're down at the bottom of the playground, you know, doing something, you know, pond dipping, or, you know, looking at mini beasts or something? You know, can you share work with your students down there? You know, yeah, you can. And, you know, can you receive work back from them in that sense? Yes, of course you can. So what does a field trip look like when maybe you don't have Wi-Fi and you don't have the internet? You know, is there meaningful creativity that can happen on the device, you know, without being connected to the internet? And I think for us, that was a very important element of what we wanted the story around digital learning to be in the city of Glasgow. And I've seen this again and again, you know, in various other parts of the world. So, you know, one of the projects I helped with was in Greenland, which is, by the way, an amazing place if you ever get to visit it. It's like, you know, right out, it's the least populated place on the planet, statistically, sort of per square mile or whatever. But, you know, they're looking at doing an entire one-to-one project with iPad in Greenland. Now, one of the things in Greenland that struck me almost immediately was that you know, even hotel Wi-Fi was kind of like £40 for half an hour.
Yeah.
You know, so because, you know, getting meaningful Wi-Fi up to the top of the world is not a trivially easy thing to do. But they're looking at it and saying, well, digital learning can happen. And there is a narrative around digital learning and digital technology and education, even in a context like that. So for me, that is fascinating, and it's not in any way to say the internet's not important and we don't need the internet and let's kind of just focus on what we can do without the internet. Absolutely not. But I think it's an interesting kind of angle on it that what about what you can do when it's not just about what you can do online?
I can't agree with you more on that. I think one of the ways that children can share their work on an iPad with their pals is to hold it up. You know,
yeah.
Show them.
Yeah.
You know, you do something, you make something, you record something, you put something together, and you can show it fine just by holding it up. And I wonder if recently we've in education tipped into following, you know, the cloud services that business and things have done when we don't necessarily either need it or have the bandwidth. Everything doesn't need to live in the cloud. It's handy to be able to give it to the teacher, but if my work doesn't get off my iPad, other than, you know, occasionally when I need to save it somewhere or send it somewhere else, I don't think that's a terrible thing. Yeah, you still.
No, and I think some of that is about, you know, thinking a little bit about, you know, where and when. And I think for me, obviously, my life now, the cloud is just so fundamentally important of, you know, some of the collaboration that I now do with kind of educators, you know, in Scotland and around the world. It wouldn't happen, and it would be impossible with it not for the with the cloud. And you can see the power of that in the classroom, you know. And so tools like, you know, Google Classroom and Shobi and some of these kind of really fundamentally powerful tools are amazing in the classroom. But there is an element of learning that can be done as well, and ways that the devices are interesting when they're not connected. So I think, you know, that's a kind of an interplay which is right now developing as we speak, and we're obviously becoming more and more dependent on cloud services. But it's nice to know that the technology can just be used to, you know, take an image that you've discovered in some place where you are, where your class happens to be, maybe add to it, mark it up, you know, bring out some of the detail, share it with your friends, collaborate on it, all without having to know that you're dependent on internet access.
Yeah, that sounds good. I'm pushing it here, Andrew. last question. So we've talked quite a lot of sort of high level stuff. And I wonder if you've got, it's been doing quite a lot of training of other people recently, and I wonder, like, somebody who's got iPads in their class, maybe not used them much before, a good, easy pick-up, do-it, start thing?
I mean, I suppose there's a couple of things there. Well, number one, I think, is just a lesson, and that would be don't get hung up on apps. Don't rush out to think, you know, now that you've got your iPad, you must... There's 250,000 education apps on the App Store. I need to go through all of them and find out what the best ones are. I think that's not true. You get a whole bunch of apps on the iPad out of the box, and I'm pretty confident if you spent a year in your class just looking at how you could use the apps that are out of the box on your iPad, you could do some really transformational things in terms of learning. So that would be probably my number one lesson. In terms of first things to do, I mean, the first thing I would think to do would be just explore something very simple like the camera.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is having a visualizer in your hand actually do in the classroom? So what does that do to peer assessment and how peer assessment can take place in real time in the context of any lesson? when you use your iPad as a visualizer, you know, hand that to the, you know, bring your work and use the camera on the iPad and say, everybody stop, let's just look at what so-and-so's doing. Can we give him a bit, you know, let's give him some points to improve, let's give him some praise points. You know, some of that kind of stuff's really powerful. Even taking images and being able to, like I say, mark them up. So, you know, you could take, well done, you finished your piece of work, take a photograph of it and send it to me, and then you can use that photograph on your iPad and add your comments right on the device. You know, you could potentially just even something really simple like screen recording your iPad. So you're looking at the student's piece of work, you're highlighting areas while you go through it, but you're also talking them through it. So, you know, well done, this is a great piece of work. Love the first paragraph. You know how we were talking about adjectives? You've got a couple of really good ones in here. I'd like to see a couple more. So maybe you should try the second paragraph again and add some more really powerful adjectives, you know, and then send that video back to the student and let them. So just experimenting with some really fundamental things, I think, it takes away some of the fear of the device from the teacher. And it also, I hope, I would focus on trying ways that the teacher can make the experience of teaching better. Because to me, that's the way that any project's going to be a success, is that the teachers actually feel like this makes my life better.
Yeah, and not a burden.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If they feel that, they'll use it. And if they use it, they'll find out more ways that they can you know, use it effectively. And if they do that, then you know, you're onto a successful project.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Andrew. I don't know if there's anything else you want to say, but I feel I've taken up quite a lot of your time here. It's been fascinating.
I suppose I apologise for getting over enthusiastic about it and going on for 45 minutes.
I think that's it's been really, really interesting. And I think this, the way that you seem to be approaching it in Glasgow and all the rest of it, sounds as if it's just going to be great, and I'd really be interested to see how it goes.
Well, we're dependent on the goodwill and the attitude of all the staff in Glasgow, and judging by the people I've met so far, you know, there's some fantastic teachers there, and they're already doing fantastic things, and you know, we're excited about that. And like you can probably hear, I still feel as enthusiastic and sort of inspired by all this as I did sort of 10 years ago in the classroom. So I think as long as I'm feeling like that, it's a good part of the world to be involved in terms of technology and education.
Yeah, certainly if you look at the various things on Twitter from Glasgow teachers at the moment, they seem very up for it. That can only be a plus. So I've got to do now, Andrew, say thanks very much. That was brilliant. Love talking to you. In a wee second or two, I'm going to hang up the broadcast of this, and I'll have the podcast listeners, if you've just caught at the end, the podcast should be up over the next day or two on edutalk.cc, and we'll pop it out on Twitter when it arrives. So I'll do
perfect. Thanks, John.
To the listeners, I'll say good night. Cheers.
Good night.